Before you start listening to this podcast, we've got a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, which will give you full access to everything on our website, and we'll also throw in a free £20 Amazon voucher. Just go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm John Connolly, and I'm joined today by Katie Balls, The Spectator's deputy political editor, and Stephen Bush, the New Statesman's political editor. Today, there was a bit of a sense of spring in the air at the government's daily coronavirus press conference. Stephen Powis, the clinical director of NHS England, said that green shoots were starting to appear in the terms of the spread of the disease after a number of new cases of coronavirus plateaued for the first time in the UK. Katie, to start us off, I guess when people hear this and the start of positivity from someone like Powis, they'll compare that with earlier headlines today, which also showed that the death rate in the UK was particularly high. It was the highest it had been today, at around 360 deaths. How do they sort of square up these two ideas, that the death rate is going up, but also that there's been a plateau of new cases?
I think if you look at the slides that were presented yesterday during the press conference by Patrick Vallance, the point, as he was explaining, was there is a delay clearly between cases of the coronavirus and needing hospital treatment, and then, of course, fatalities if they do occur. So I think that the death toll and the number of cases are two different metrics which have a time difference between them. Clearly, when people hear the death toll going up as much as it has today, it's very worrying. But I think what you have to realise is if the government keeps us in the thousands and out of the tens of thousands, that will be seen, given the circumstances, as a positive result. Not positive in the sense, clearly it's very bad in the sense that people are passing away, but given the area and the realm in which they are working, I think that if you keep the death toll in the thousands, that would be looking at all the models they are looking at. That is the sense that they have managed to control it. The suppression has worked to a degree. So that is going to go up. And I think that you've slowly seen government figures, medical officers trying to plant that idea as things have gone on. But I think particularly we are now entering, and you heard it alluded to in today's press conference, a very difficult 2 to 3 weeks. As James wrote in his column at the weekend in The Sun and blogged on Coffee House, the expectation in government is now that the peak will be in mid-April. So that means up till then, we are likely going to see worse figures, even if green shoots are somewhere in the distance in terms of the suppression strategy yielding some results. We still can't escape the fact that there is going to be a peak, and that's going to be very difficult.
And Stephen, it's interesting when Powis was talking about these green shoots, he sort of caveated it very heavily and said, oh, but you know, the winter might wipe them out. Do you think there's a worry in government that people might start to relax or start to chafe against sort of social distancing measures if they do see cases plateau? Or do you think that's countered by what Katie was saying and the fact that the deaths are going to go up in the next few weeks are going to keep people sort of scared and compliant?
Well, I think no one really knows, right, one way or the other. But the fear that... So basically, what the government is trying to do in its messaging is three things. One, to reiterate to people that most people are following the rules, because one of the ways where behavioural science is very established and where there is quite a strong evidential basis and there is replicability, the kind of elusive thing in all experiments, you don't just want to be able to do something once, you need to be able to show that you can do it on repeated occasions. One of the areas that it is that if you say to people, look, those people are flouting the rules, more people flout the rules. If you say, look, the majority of people are following them, more people follow the rules. So they both want to do that. They also want to reassure people that we're not going to be living like this, you know. We're not going to end up in 2024 in a situation in which people are fighting duels in order to have one of the elusive jobs as a delivery driver so they can feel the sun on their face for longer than an hour or so every day, right? That's not going to happen. But the third thing they want to do is they don't want people to hear that and go, oh, brilliant, in 2 months I will be able to go outside again and do whatever I want, because the anticipation is it is much harder to maintain political support for social distancing if people have had unrealistic expectations stoked by overly optimistic sounds from the government and the press. So those are all of the different things they're trying to do, while at the same time, what we don't know is as Katie explains very well, right, the death rate is going to go up even if this is working. Now, the positive, in heavily caveated with the fact that obviously this, but the positive outcome of that would be people looking at it and going, oh, that's terrifying, I'd better stay indoors. The negative and equally possible outcome is people look at that and go, well, I'm probably going to get it anyway, or I'm probably going to die anyway, I want to feel the sun on my face, it's May, it's June, etc., etc. So, yeah, the government is very aware that they cannot, it is not certain how people will react to the death rate going up. And everything they're doing is about landing those three messages. Well, everything they're trying to do is about landing those three messages, because there's an open debate about whether or not they are successfully landing those three messages. And the proof will be, I guess, in today's bulletins on the 10 and 6 o'clock news and on music radio.
And Katie, we saw as well the government get a bit more of a hard time about the number of coronavirus tests they're performing each day. I think the government's sort of getting close to its original 10,000 a day target, but obviously comparisons are being made to other countries, places like Germany, where they're doing many thousands more. Do you feel like you get the sense that the government feels that it's falling short on testing and is going to come under more pressure about this?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like we're in a bit of a groundhog day at these press conferences, where every day the government asked about testing. Every day the government says that it plans to do more testing. The chief medical officer, or whoever's representing the medical advisors in these press conferences, will say something diplomatic about the fact that it's important to do testing. They hope to do testing. Sometimes we hear about the antibody test. Sometimes we hear about some of the difficulties in getting those tests. But there is never a clear answer in terms of when more testing will happen. I think people are dancing around it to a degree. And also, there's some holding back on, you know, is it because I think people want to know, you know, as you always tend to, is someone to blame? Was an order not put in on time? But I think ultimately the problem the government has, I think, is if you look at Germany, which is the UK is now constantly compared to, if you speak to people in government, they will say, well, German industry is in a good place to actually all step in on this. Just as I think the UK have found that when it comes to making ventilators, and we had a fairly encouraging update on ventilators in that press conference, the UK government found that actually, if you look at the companies here, the companies that started here, the companies of engineering firms here, and that part of their department, they're in a good place to get experts on board to do that. And I think that they think Germany, in terms of the industries it naturally has, was in a good place to have mass testing, and they don't have that. So I think there is just a sense that no one is saying mass testing is a bad idea. I think everyone thinks it's a good idea. I think that when you hear certain people such as Jeremy Hunt go out and say we should be doing this, I actually don't think anyone in government disagrees with it as a strategy. It's just that the reality of geopolitics right now and where all the resources are means it's very difficult for the government to up this. But I think they're going to come under increasing scrutiny for this in the coming days. We've already seen it dominate the news over the past week or so. But the fact that I think today was another reminder that they just don't have firm answers on it. And I think if you can't provide dates of when these tests are going to come in, people are going to want to at least know what the exact problem is.
Katie mentioned there that there was possibly some good news on ventilators. Are we going to start seeing those sort of being produced on a larger scale next week, Stephen?
Well, you know, ultimately, look, I'm not an expert in either health in procurement policy, so I don't know. I think that certainly the thing that most people in Whitehall have been taken aback by is the speed at which they have been able to increase the amount of production. That was something that people did not think would happen, or that is in part, and this is one of the subplots, and I think will kind of come back when this is all over, in part because I think one of the things a lot of civil servants think is they think some of the initial problems and the things that underlaid the original strategy for fighting this virus was that for a very long time, the government has had a very developed plan to deal with a new and more deadly strain of influenza, which you would fight by cocooning the most vulnerable and it passing through the rest of the population because of the different ways that flu is transmissible. You just kind of accept that that's broadly the only way you'd have to deal with it, which was, of course, the initial approach that we and a couple of other countries took And one of the kind of theories on the street, as it, yeah, theories around Whitehall, is that one of the reasons why this was so attractive to the scientific advisors was that subconsciously there was this like, well, we've got this brilliant flu prevention plan and we are going to use it regardless of what the evidence says. But one of the things that people always feared when they modelled how you deal with a pandemic was that production lines would collapse. Because of the nature of this virus, that hasn't happened. But I think it does mean that there's a lot of pleasant surprise among officialdom about the level of the extent to which they have been able to call on the rest of the economy to generate ventilators.
I think one of the things going to be interesting, which I've noticed this week, is there's clearly going to be inquiry after this has passed, if we can think that far ahead. And the government currently is facing a lot of criticism for not having enough protective equipment for those working in the NHS. That's another frequent story, along with the lack of testing. Currently, it's all aimed at the current government. But I think Stephen mentioned this plan that was in place for, you know, a pandemic, how to deal with these things. And a lot of this goes back to, yes, the Tory government, but different people in charge. And I think that we might start to see a look back and certain figures brought into this, you know, so former health secretaries, former health ministers, and people who signed off that plan. I think there's more that's going to come out there. So it won't just be on why hasn't Matt Hancock done that? Why can't Michael Gove do this? I think we will see a change in conversation at some point.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, Stephen. And thank you for listening.